Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is on vacation. He returns on Monday. I will be off on Monday. We're doing tag team vacations. Frank Fontana sitting in Bill's chair today.
Heidi ho.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am just beside myself with this crazy Twitter war going on with our president. Yeah,
unreal.
I know people say he's not my president. He is my president. I'm not happy about it, and I find myself being more and more embarrassed each and every day.
It's elementary. You know, it really is. And I was mentioning with Steve Cochran before we jumped in here, how is there not a public relations person getting control of his Twitter account and monitoring or filtering at minimum, you know?
He won't allow it. He's got control of his own...
But he's representing America.
He's representing himself,
yeah,
is what I'm feeling.
And,
crazy. You know, Melania Trump has her whole anti-cyberbullying campaign.
Mm. Slip by her on that one.
Well, I mean, does she say something?
Let's see. Let's see if by the end of today she comes out with something.
Let's put it this way. Should she say something? Like, you know, the tweets from my husband aren't necessarily the views of his wife.
I mean, you can only imagine in that relationship... as he treats women in general, what that relationship's like. I doubt she's able to do much other than what he tells her she can do.
All right, what about Ivanka? She is
a
strong-willed woman who's a successful businesswoman. Why isn't she going, Daddy?
Let's see. Again, I wait. The day is young. Let's see what happens in the day. But this is also a big picture of what our society is today with the advent of social media. You know, presidents never had this platform before. They depended on news outlets to deliver the messages and or written statements. And, you know, so today with social media and everyone trying to become famous off of social media.
Well, Frank, wait, the last president did have
He did Twitter. Have a Twitter account.
This is true.
And
is
used
true?
It very differently.
Exactly. Different person. Different personality.
And wasn't Barack Obama the first president to have a Twitter handle?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And he did it the right way, in my opinion. This guy's out of control. And he is our president. I respect that at the same time.
I do, too. I respect the office. I have to. I'm sorry. And I'm still hopeful that something good becomes of this.
But it's also like any other corporation. America is a corporation. And if we here at WGN, Wendy, and you know, if you say something a little off, we get 1,000 texts, 1,000 emails. Oh, my God, Wendy's the devil. You know,
now wouldn't be the first time.
You know, times a million. You're the president of the country. And you're saying this outrageous stuff. There's no accountability.
And I hate to get on my soapbox here because I use liquid soap and it doesn't come in a box anymore.
It's slippery.
Just what message does this show to kids who are on social media probably more than adults are? It's like okay to bully someone?
Okay to
and
bully.
I hate that term because people, I think, use it too much.
True. I think it's an attention grab. You know, like for kids, you know, to do more outrageous things, say more outrageous things. Excuse me. Like, for instance, there's a story that just came out on Drudge Report. And, gosh, I'm losing my voice here.
You need me to cover while you clear your throat?
Please do. Hold on.
All right. Frank Fontana clearing his throat. He's in for Bill Leff today, who also clears his throat. And I do, too, sometimes.
I'm back. So the story goes, this young couple, let's see here, out of Minnesota, this woman is charged with fatally shooting her boyfriend in a failed YouTube video stunt. Insanity, okay? As part of a young couple's quest to get famous on YouTube, this 19-year-old woman shot her boyfriend, who was holding against his chest an encyclopedia. And 22-year-old Pedro Ruiz is now dead. Perez, Mona Lisa Perez, who was pregnant, appeared from jail by video at Norman County District Court proceeding Wednesday. They posted a $7,000 cash bond, and she's out right now. Ruiz, supposedly the husband, held up the book, described by county attorney James Brew, as a hardcovered encyclopedia. The wife then proceeded to hold up a .50 caliber Desert Eagle pistol and shot her husband through the book, thinking the book was going to stop them. And prior to this, they said, watch how this is going to get us 300,000 views on YouTube. We're going to become famous.
And if I may just say that Business Insider did a report on the most popular YouTube stars worldwide. There's a guy, PewDiePie. Kevin, are you aware of this guy? Kevin's a young millennial.
I've not watched his videos, but I know who he is.
I have a 14-year-old who watches these YouTube stars. PewDiePie, the world's most successful YouTube star, makes, he has over 54 million subscribers.
54 million.
He made about $15 million in 2016 and is expected to exceed that.
What does he do, Cab?
He's just a goof.
I think he was like he started with like video game reviews or something like that, but then he became like a personality. I don't really know.
That is more views than any network, any of the top five networks combined don't get 45 million views or followers. I mean and I understand the value in that for brands. So and then herein lies the why these kids do it. I want to get 300,000 more followers, so I'm going to have my wife shoot me because then maybe Smith & Wesson will sponsor my YouTube page and I'll become rich.
Okay, but first of all, you know, when you put something out on the internet, Donald Trump, it's there forever.
Yeah.
When you put silly videos up there, it's there forever. So sometime in life when your subscribers go away and you're losing that money and you try to get a real job, there's a trail that potential employers can look at and go, wow, this kid was, you know, eating a frog or something on video. They do stupid things. It's short-lived. It's like American Idol was the way for someone to become a successful recording artist. Yeah, sort of. But
right.
Now it's like to become famous, you just have to do stupid things.
But if this is where media is trending, this is where ad dollars are going, is all to social media, all to the internet. What then in 10 years will be the new revenue streams? So are these kids onto something? Yes. They shouldn't be shooting each other and killing each other online. And then, you know, you take that a step further. You got these, you know, gangsters out there who are posting these videos of shootings and beatings and brawls and all this stuff. And they're getting a million views too.
I was watching this, I think it's iDubbbz or iDubb or something. It's some video YouTuber.
Seen it before, yeah.
Again, I have a 14-year-old son. This is right up his alley. And they were playing Twister with like the red spot had spaghetti and meatballs. So if you went to put your hand in it, it would be gross. The blue one had a mouse trap. So if you had to put your foot on there, I mean, these are stupid things.
Yeah.
But nobody is shooting someone. I mean, that's what I don't understand.
Me either. And who knows? Again, I'd love to have the crystal ball that goes into the future and says this is what the world of economy and media and ad dollars are going to do and drive the industry. Because right now, that's what's driving that industry. You know, is the brands are looking to infiltrate into social realms. And those kids who have the 45 million followers are the new stars of today. Wendy, you worked an entire career to get where you are today. You know what that value is right now? A lot less than those kids who've been doing it for 3 months and have 45 million people because they shot somebody. It's insanity.
All right, but how do you benefit from this? Yeah, you're in the news now, but the girl's going to go to jail.
It doesn't matter.
He's dead.
I guess it's a numbers game. It's a money game and a numbers game at the end of the day.
But now, had this been successful,
be huge.
It would be huge.
They would have made the news in a different kind of way. Yeah. I think maybe not. You know.
But now, how do you police some of this, and should you police some of this, and can you police some of this?
Good question. I mean, I guess parents, where are you? You know. I mean, Kevin, this is your world. I mean, what do you see happening?
What stupid thing are you going to do on YouTube later this weekend?
Well, I'm going on a trip, so stay tuned. Lots of hijinks to come.
Yeah. Just don't shoot anybody, Kevin.
No shootings, yeah.
It's just so bizarre to me, though. There are these guys, Smosh Brothers, and they were one of the first YouTube sensations everywhere. They're kind of funny. They're two guys, and it starts out... they parody video games and pop culture, and it's kind of funny, but they made in 2016 $7 million.
Good Lord.
They're not the top of the heap here, 22.6 million subscribers.
Wow. You remember, I mean, this is going to date us, but remember the Jerky Boys?
Yes.
Right? Hey, Jerky. I mean, I don't know. This is probably
prank
way before
phone calls.
Kevin,
I remember
you do
Jerky Boys, yeah,
all right, good.
Like little CDs and stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
those were the original OG. You know, I would say before social media, those guys made tapes. Remember the cassette tapes? And I bought them. Everybody bought them, but it was harmless. It was prank phone calls, you know. And these guys got famous off of it. It was awesome.
Although they got famous off it, where are they now?
Good point. Good point. I don't know if they ever evolved. Kevin, look into that. See if they evolved into the YouTube era.
Yeah, we want to always do a Where Are They Now segment. Maybe we should talk to the Jerky
Bring
Boys.
Bring back the Jerky Boys.
Well, at least, you know, Bart Simpson got some material from the Jerky Boys would call Mo to do the prank phone calls.
Yes, yes. And I think it sparked a whole bunch. Didn't it start on a radio show somehow, I believe?
Might be Johnny B.
I think so.
I don't think so, but he played them a lot. I don't know. I just don't know what the answer is, but it when you have the President of the United States tweeting these things, if you're just tuning in, we should probably go over. Can we take a break and come back, and we'll go over his exact tweet? And I don't watch Mika and Joe. I don't watch Fox. I don't watch MSNBC or whatever it is. I want to escape from political talk. Yeah. I know what's going on because it comes out in the news. But anytime, we were talking about this off the air, anytime you get in a discussion with someone, you can't have a discussion anymore. It turns into a fight and somebody leaves.
Right, which is just ridiculous.
It is.
I mean, I want to say it's not that important where it's going to ruin your personal relationships, like the story you told me. It's really not. You know, this whole Democratic Republic thing, it's just, I mean, it's an opinion, folks. We don't have to kill each other over it. We don't have to fight over it. It just doesn't make sense to me.
312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder here, Frank Fontana, sitting in for Bill Leff. And it's 720 WGN. It's Frank Fontana in for Bill Leff, and I'm Wendy Snyder. And if I can, just go over the tweet that Donald Trump sent out this morning, just as MSNBC's Morning Joe was ending. He said, Donald Trump, and I quote, I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore, in parentheses. Then how come low IQ crazy Mika, along with psycho Joe, came to Mar-a-Lago 3 nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me? She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no! !
Fascinating.
What's with him and the women bleeding? Wasn't that the other reporter who was bleeding from
Megyn Kelly?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What is up with this?
You know, what's funny is I watch a little bit of Morning Joe almost every day. And the segment I caught today, part of it was there's a conservative New York Times columnist, and he wrote a column about how he's abandoned Twitter because he considers it pornography for the mind and how it's nothing but bad behavior and people, you know, bullying each other. And Brzezinski and Scarborough and all those are sitting around talking about that. And then their show ends with this tweet from the president.
Wow. Aren't there things going on in the world like this healthcare plan, and there are some issues going on in Syria? I mean, I don't expect my president to be dealing with trivial things like this.
Well, and bringing attention to the fact that somebody's talking negatively about you, you know, it brings you down to that level.
I get that. I don't like when anybody's mad at me. I don't like when somebody doesn't like me. I always try and win them over. So in that respect, I'm very much like Donald Trump.
But if I don't know, let's say Fox News Chicago was talking about you, Wendy, would you go and tweet, you know, that the news anchor on Fox was talking about you? You know,
no, I'd ignore it and hope nobody watched it.
Right. That's my point. Or even bring yourself to that level to address it. And then, you know, for the millions and millions of people who didn't see the show, now you just alerted them that they were talking crap about you.
What makes me laugh is anytime someone tells me, you know, they're so angry they don't listen anymore, they're usually commenting on something they heard that day.
Right.
So
right.
They are listening.
I know.
So when you point out, I don't watch anymore, that means he was watching.
Yeah, and to urge your followers to stop watching the show, you know, to me is just like, all right.
How is this all right? How is his party, the Republican Party, how do they let this happen? Is he trying to get fired? Steve, please, I mean this sincerely, I feel like sometimes he's doing these things to just go, I want to see how much I can get away with before I'm removed.
I don't think that's true. And well, you certainly couldn't be fired. But I think it's just who he is. I think, you know, this is how he was described in the campaign. And people kept saying, well, he's going to change. He even said, I'm going to be more presidential. He's 70 years old. I'm 54. I'm not going to change much. You know, he's older than that. He's not going to change who he is. And he's behaving in the way that he had long before the election.
And Frank, you said something off the air that really resonated with me, because you said before, you know, it's the president. What one man can have all the power, because you think there are checks and balances in place, but there seems not to be any.
Well, yeah, I just thought, like, all right, as the Republican Party, isn't there influencers that then contribute to the overall decision-making process or the House and everybody involved? And I just thought that one president can't push that button to the nuclear bomb. Or could he really do that? I mean, Steve, I mean, does he have that executive power to just override everything, say whatever he wants? I mean, Steve Cochran made a comment that he almost feels like he wants to be Putin. You know, he wants to be a dictator. He wants to be able to say and do whatever he wants when he wants. But this is America.
But he's doing it. No one's stopping him from doing what he wants. So, again, he doesn't have single control over starting World War III, does he, Steve?
He has the statutory authority. He's the commander-in-chief. So he has that ability. I mean, they're certainly defense secretary and people around him, but... That's what it means to be.
But what about the
commander-in-chief,
like the board of advisors? Could they even a commander-in-chief or of any large corporation has to get things approved by a board? Correct. Typically,
he's the commander-in-chief, so there might be people trying to talk him out of things. There might be people if they, would risk court-martial if they think following an order would be against the law. But if he issues an order, that's why we elected him. That's what we elected someone to be commander in chief.
I just wonder if he's like, laying in his bed in his boxer shorts and he rolls over, picks up his phone and he's like looking through his Twitter account.
He is not a boxer short guy. He has got a beautiful set of pajamas that he's wearing. Top
like
and bottom.
Silk pajamas.
Yes,
yeah.
With a robe.
The robe.
I'm thinking Hugh Hefner a little bit. Dressed like that.
Yeah, the point being, is he just rolling over and just randomly, casually just tweeting these things out? Or is he giving it real thought and going, this is my intent. I want to shake things up here.
As someone who has ADHD, I'm pretty sure he does too, because most of the issues with ADHD is impulse control. He's no filters. So he thinks it, he posts it.
Wow.
I mean, when I send an email, when I tweet something, I look over it a couple few times because I want to make sure I don't have a misspelling,
right?
Because then someone's going to slam you about being stupid just because the autocorrect, changed a word.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I just think it's think, type, tweet.
Knowing fully that this is going to be an outrage, right? I mean, you're doing this knowing you're going to hit that.
Trying to get a reaction.
Get a reaction.
I don't know what happens. Hmm. I just know that I want to switch gears and talk about something that really matters in this big world of ours.
Which is?
I saw Rob Lowe is the new Colonel Sanders, and are they really sending chicken to space? Have you seen these commercials?
I heard that he was, and I've seen him in costume, and he looks great. I think he makes a really handsome-looking Colonel Sanders.
I thought his face was too thin at first to be a good Colonel Sanders because, Colonel Sanders was a little more jowly,
a little more plump
than Rob Lowe.
Who was before Rob Lowe? Wasn't that comedian? I forgot who his name.
Jim Gaffigan.
I thought he was okay, too.
Norm Macdonald was fantastic. Daryl Hammond was good.
So do you think they were trying these actors out and these comedians to find the right new Colonel Sanders?
No, I think they're just going to keep switching through this. Mm-hmm. But the sandwich is the zinger. Rob Lowe is playing Colonel Harlan Sanders in a space suit. It's part of this ad campaign. And I was watching TV last night and my sons are like, are we really sending the zinger to space? It's a breaded chicken sandwich. I have not had it.
Yeah. Me either. I don't really go to KFC.
I don't either.
I fear of what's actually in the chicken. I'm not saying I've heard it.
The 11 herbs and spices?
Yeah, and everything else that might be in there. I heard a disturbing story from one of my neighbors who's in the ag business, and he does a lot of import and export. And he said that in Turkey, they recently had stopped a boat of wheat coming in that, that feeds the cows and the pigs and everything. And it was supposed to be organic. Well, when it arrived in Turkey, it wasn't organic until they stamped a box that said organic on it. And then they sent it to the U.S. So everything you think is grass-fed organic meat here in the U.S. potentially may not be.
See, but you're more into that. I don't check out organic stuff as much. I guess it doesn't matter as much to me. It should. It doesn't.
Well, you just pay a ton more for it, and you think that you're getting the healthier
alternative. Well, yeah, and to have it just stamped inappropriately.
Right. Is wrong.
KFC is partnering with balloon maker Worldview on this project. The chain says the launch window opens June 21st, which we're in the window, for what it says is the longest controlled stratospheric balloon flight with a commercial payload in history. The sandwich will return to Earth and bring back some kind of data from out there. I don't believe there is a Zinger chicken sandwich from KFC floating around the atmosphere. Do you?
I don't. How long do they anticipate it being out there? Does it say?
I don't know. Is it in a bubble? And a sandwich in a bubble?
Is it going to be eaten when it returns to Earth?
Wouldn't that be weird if it came back with one bite taken?
One bite missing.
All right. It's Wendy. It's Frank Fontana at 720 WG. We're having a birthday party.
Yay. I like it. That's a good. Who is this?
Altered Images.
It's different. It's a different version of it. You've heard many versions of the birthday song. This is unique.
There's a certain iconic thing that many of us have that is celebrating its 10th birthday today. And ABC News correspondent Alex Stone is going to help us celebrate. Alex, how are you?
Well, happy birthday, guys. Doing well. Yeah, 10 years ago today, we had BlackBerry devices. We had flip phones. You might have had the Razor. Remember how hot that phone
I
was?
I loved my Razor.
I had every single
That's
one
right.
you just mentioned.
Exactly. And today, on this date, there were crowds that were lined up outside Apple stores to get their hands on what was really a mythical, mysterious device at the time that Steve Jobs had just unveiled. And this unveiling...
We are calling it... iPhone.
iPhone. Oh, how it would change our lives.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
And he told us right before it came out, which it went on sale 10 years ago today, that he knew it was going to be big.
I think we're going to hit a grand slam with this.
Yeah, and I think he was right. You know, a lot of people may be saying right now, well, I have an Android, I have a Windows phone. Those were big, too. Yeah, but iPhone was first. And they have battled in courts over who came up with the technology. Was it Samsung? Did Apple? But bottom line, to the consumer out on the market, iPhone was the first phone of what you would think of as a smartphone that we have today with all of the apps and the touch capabilities beyond just an email device like the BlackBerry, and it was 10 years ago today.
I'm telling you, that Razor phone was the coolest thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
I love to flip it open.
And it looks so cool, too.
But, you know, you couldn't play games on it. The pictures were so pixelated and blurry and terrible. The iPhone, the minute I got one, you turned it on, and I was just amazed it all came to life. So it really has changed the world, hasn't it?
Well, it has. If you think about it, when's the last time you bought a map? The last time you used a physical standalone calculator, an alarm clock, an encyclopedia, a flashlight? You bought a camera because unless you're a professional photographer, you have a photography hobby that most likely you're taking your pictures on your phone now. They're replacing wallets increasingly with Apple Pay
and, how about
and
music?
Now competing devices. And it put the internet in your pocket. You know,
yeah.
For the first time in 2007, you could look up anything, anytime, right in your pocket. You had a computer that you could look things up.
I would like to know the statistics to find out what is the most common use of the flashlight feature, because I would bet it's when you're walking your dog and you need to pick up after them if it's dark out. Because that's what I use it for.
Upper?
Yes.
Or if you're a Kardashian, you're using it as an external light for your selfies.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah,
and for
that.
Me, it's going out in the garage and resetting every time there's a power outage, resetting the control for the sprinklers in our yard because I need to figure out how to put a battery in. So every time, I got to go back out there. And but, you know, the iPhone has also come a long way. The original one didn't have a flash on it. It didn't have a selfie camera, the front-facing camera. You couldn't take videos. You couldn't send pictures via Apple Messenger or via text. It was 2G, as most phones were going 3G for data. It was seen as slow because it was only 2G at that time. And there were 15 native apps. The App Store didn't come until 2008. There was no App Store yet when the iPhone came out. So you got what Apple gave you, and it was their, you know, the calculator and the alarm clock and that sort of thing. There were some websites that you could go to download some rogue apps, but for the most part, it wasn't until 08 that you could start downloading apps. And then think about some of the world's most profitable companies right now, at least when it comes to stocks, are companies that were developed on apps. Uber, Facebook, Twitter, of posting pictures, of ordering a car. All of these companies that have developed off of smartphones.
Now, do you think they could have predicted the addictive quality that the iPhone has captured in our society. You know,
and all the sleep we're losing because of it.
Yeah, they could have hoped for it, but predicted it. I don't know. That you think of all of the, when you go to a waiting room right now, what's the first thing you do? If you're waiting for the doctor, you pull out your phone and start flipping through Facebook or looking at your emails. You don't interact with anybody. You have to act like you're busy. Even if you're doing absolutely nothing, it's something to look at. Waiting for a plane to take off, or even in an elevator, walking down the street, sitting at dinner.
I was just going to say, the classic elevator.
Restaurants? Yeah, at dinner time, though, you walk into a restaurant, and people are on their phones. That there is that addictive nature to it, that you walk away from it, and you think, oh, my, I might have gotten a message. But also, work can expect that. I mean, we're expected to constantly, that if you don't respond to an email within a minute or two, then you haven't, you're not paying attention. That, you know, work is different now, thanks to, it started with the BlackBerry, but then into smartphones.
All right. What I like about it, and it has made, as you mentioned, doctor's offices, especially you're taking your kids to the pediatrician. I don't know. I love my pediatrician, but it's a 2-hour wait every time, it seems. When you're getting
your new pediatrician.
I love her, though. And then when you're waiting to get your car fixed. I mean, yeah, the coffee's nice, but you can sit there and play Candy Crush. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they go, Miss Snyder, your car is ready. So it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, or catch up on your Netflix.
Busy. Yeah, exactly. You can watch Netflix, always look busy. You can ignore the crazy uncle at Thanksgiving when, you know, you're sitting around, and you can act like you've got work to do. That it's part of our lives now. And when you had the razor, if you forgot it at home, you likely just went to work and thought, I'll deal with it when I get home. You leave home now and you forgot your phone.
You
many
go
of
back.
Us are turning around and coming right back to pick up that phone.
Absolutely. Alex Stone on the line with us, ABC News correspondent. We are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the Apple iPhone. We're going to take a quick break and come back. And Frank, you have some interesting stuff you'd like to talk to Alex about.
Sure. There's the great stuff we just talked about with the iPhone. And then there's the cons of the iPhone, which we'll discuss.
Stay tuned. 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Frank Fontana. Montana at 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder. Yes, that is me. And Frank Fontana is sitting in for Bill Left today. We are talking iPhone with ABC News correspondent Alex Stone.
We are. And we spoke about all the wonderful things that the iPhone does for us in today's world. You know, makes the life more efficient. We can access our music and our movies and all that stuff at the click of a little finger swipe. But the cons of owning a smartphone or smart device, I've owned every generation of iPhone since it ever came out. I was the guy waiting online. I had
you
to have
were?
The, you had the first one, huh?
I had the very first one. I still have it, with the oval back, you know, that's that rounded back to it.
Then I went,
so I have every generation stored somewhere in my house. And then I have now the latest 7 Plus, which I love. But here's the thing. I'm having a hard time shutting off in life. Like it's created a world where you mentioned it. You just don't ever stop. And Wendy, you said you wake up how many times a night?
I wake up, Alex, this is crazy. I wake up, it seems like 3 o'clock every morning, like clockwork. And I check my phone because I get AP alerts and I want to know what's going on with the world. And I fall back to sleep. And then at 5, I wake up again and I pick up that phone to see what has transpired since I've been sleeping.
Yeah, and I know what you mean because, and I've tried, we have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I've tried to be much more present with them because I find as they're playing, I'm in the corner responding to emails or putting them down to bed. You feel it vibrate, and as they're brushing their teeth, you're looking at your phone or even laying in bed with them that as you're cuddling with them at night, you feel it and you go, oh, and just and do a quick glance down by the side so they can't see. And I'm thinking, this can't be good, that I think this might be addiction. I think I might have withdrawals if I pulled away from this. But and I've tried not to look at it if I wake up in the middle of the night, because then I'm wide awake. Even though you can set that nighttime setting to take the blue light out of it.
It doesn't help. Come on.
Well, once I've read stuff and my mind's going. So I'm with you on that. And there is that downside to it that, you know, we talked about at dinner tables and as you're walking down the street. There is a true aspect to it of social interaction and daily lives. And I mean, mine's sitting right next to me right here. And as we've been talking, I've been looking at it. Why? Because I want to know who's at my front door at home. You know, our doorbell's going off. And I mean, everything, your life is on there. And it is hard to get away from.
Well, and literally, as you speak, I'm streaming on my Instagram Live on my iPhone. Well, Wendy, say hi. And we're streaming the show. And you mentioned the blue light. What's interesting is a story just came out on the Daily Mail UK about this dermatologist. Everyone's heard of the Murad skincare line, correct? Dr. Howard Murad just went on this morning show and claims that spending 4 days in front of screens can emit that harmful blue ray, and it's equivalent to 20 minutes in front of the sun.
Well, and then how come I'm not getting tan?
Well, because you might be getting skin cancer.
Oh, great.
That's the new claim. So he's basically saying that too much screen time will be equivalent to spending too much time in front of the sun, which, no.
I knew I was wearing my bikini in front of the iPhone for a reason.
But if you're doing that, can we stream that, though? Because that could be quite the sight.
Oh, here, hang on. I'm getting a tan right now as I'm reading my emails.
So he's
careful. Donald Trump will criticize you on his Twitter account.
Which he's always tanned, which means he's probably on the phone a heck of a lot. So he's suggesting that, and this is, I don't know if it's ridiculous or not, but he's saying the blue light is emitted from the screens, which can suppress production of melatonin as well as penetrate deep into the layers of our skin, damaging collagen, hyaluronic acid, and elastin. So dim the light whenever you can and wear sunscreen when you're on your phone.
Hang on, I'm going to look at my email. Let me go put on some... Yeah, well, you know, and we have to see where these phones are going to go. That may not be a problem years from now. As they become more embedded, it will be a different problem in our lives. We know the Apple Watch has been something that Apple has been working on to, we believe, make that a standalone product so that you don't have to pair it up with your iPhone, so that you could get calls and you could get data just on your wrist. And is that going to be the future? At the time when iPhones are going bigger and they have been going to the Plus models, it seems that there is definitely a huge market for not something so tiny on your wrist that you want to be able to do more than just quickly read messages and look at headlines, that you want to do what we all do on our phones, whether it be Netflix or something else. So how will they embed it more into our lives is the big question. That the iPhone, except for being a little bit thinner, a little bit lighter, some small tweaks here and there, looks essentially the same as it did in different size now, but that it did back in 2007, that... you have to assume that in the next 10 years, it's going to change and won't be the same product for 20 years at that point, how they're going to change it, except for maybe making the glass go over the edges in the iPhone 8, if that's what they call it. Some think it will be called the iPhone X because of the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. We don't know yet, but they might make some small cosmetic changes, but probably it's going to look relatively the same when they unveil it in September.
Now, do you have the 7, Wendy?
I don't know what I have.
Let me take a look at it.
You got a six.
You got a six.
You know why? Because I wanted the headphone jack, so I didn't want to make the...
But they sell a little, like I had the same issue, but they sell a little attachment for your existing headphones that just clicks in, and for $7 you can be in the future.
Alex, I can't speak for you, but I am sick of these adapters and attachments that I have to get to make a phone work.
I agree. I've got the 6, but it's not my own doing. The company refreshed my phone, and I thought, ha-ha, I'm going to get a 7. Here we go. And then they said, and here's your 6. And I went, oh, come on.
Here's your refurbished 6.
I've got a 6, but I would like a 7, and I would like the 8 when it comes out.
The 7's great. I love it. I mean, in terms of the screen size, it's really nice. My father-in-law, though, you know, older gentleman, we got him the 7 for his birthday, and he had it for 3 months and said it was too big for him, so we went back down to a 6.
See, that's the thing. I mean, my very first cell phone, and I felt really lucky to have one, was in your car, and I had a lot of money, not really, but I had it installed, so it was really cool. It was like I had the Batmobile. It was installed in the car. The original first phones came out, and you had this giant bag you had to bring with it.
Yeah, that leather bag.
Yeah. So, I mean, they got smaller, and now they're getting bigger again.
And now they're getting bigger.
Why don't you just get an iPad?
Well, I got 3 of them.
But on the 7, couldn't you come down from the 7 Plus and just go back to the 7 non-Plus version? It would be the same size as the 6, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how many in general has your – and we'll throw this question out if you want, Wendy. You know, how has the iPhone helped or hindered your life, you know, on the birthday of the iPhone? We'd love to hear from some folks.
And, Alex, if you have time, we're going to take one call. Joe is on the line. What has iPhones – has it helped you or hurt you, Joe?
The iPhone has ruined my life.
Why? Please explain.
Well, because it's always dinging. People have the ability to text me 24 hours a day, to email me 24 hours a day, to take pictures all the time. And not only is it intrusive in my life, but, of course, my wife uses it all the time, too. So I've lost her to iPhone mania. And if we could all just think back what it was like just 10 years ago, where we weren't always plugged in. And I think quality of life has really changed for the worse. especially in a business sense. Personally, you can control it as much as you want, but the customers have no regard anymore from when and how to contact you.
I agree with Joe.
That's a great point, Joe. Thank you so much for calling. Sorry about that. I don't know what to do. There was one day I forgot my iPhone, and Alex, as you mentioned, typically I would turn around and go back, but I was halfway to work in the middle of rush hour, and I didn't have it at work. I called my husband from work and said, if you need me, if anything's up with the kids, call me at the office. I have to tell you, it was one of the least stressed days I have ever had.
Oh, I thought you were going to say one of the worst days.
I thought so, too.
If they needed me in an emergency, I know I'd hear from them. Other than that, I wasn't looking at it. It was really just kind of a pleasurable day for once.
And Wendy, I can understand that. And, you know, that gentleman, he has a great point. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to go back to 2007.
No.
Now the work life is that you're available 24/7, and if you don't want that, then, you know, essentially it's okay. Find something else that isn't expected to be 24/7, but it's the life that we live in. You know, the one thing that we can all hope they work on still, though, that was a problem in 07 and it is a problem today, is battery life.
Yeah.
Something that they need to, you know, I've got the Mophie on mine, so it doubles the battery life and all that, but even still, some days mine gets low, and that's something that as they get thinner and lighter, it seems that Apple really hasn't overcome in 10 years, is extending that battery, that there are other devices out there that get much better battery life. The iPhone just, you know, doesn't do that well. If you're using it a lot, you can use it up in half a day, and if you don't have another battery to charge it, you got to plug it in.
Well, in my opinion, is that I think they want it that way. You know, I think they want you to every couple of years be frustrated and ready
get
to get the new one. I truly believe this, and it's happened. Yeah. Right, it just happened with my iPad. My new iPad I have. It's this ultra thin one. I've had it for 4 years, and all of a sudden the battery just stops working. You know, and now I'm mad, and now I'm going to get another
one. Or it gets very slow with the new apps and the new operator, and then you're like, well, all right, I didn't need a new iPad, but it takes forever to open up an app, and you end up doing it. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that's how they stay in business and become the most profitable company in the world by getting you to buy more products.
All right, well, I got to go because I'm hearing the phantom buzz right now that my phone is giving off. You know how you hear it even when it's not
right.
Buzzing?
But it's in your pocket, too, where I'll be like, oh, it's buzzing. I can feel it. And then you feel and you go, oh, it didn't actually vibrate at all.
I know. We're like Pavlovian. Thank you so much, Alex Stone from ABC News. Appreciate talking to you.
Bye, guys. Have a good
Take
day.
Take care, Alex.
Happy birthday to the iPhone.
Yeah, happy birthday, iPhone. And you know, I do want to touch on, we have a guest coming up after the news. Amy Schumer is going to be joining us talking about dating and divorce and meeting people at weddings. But Joe, our caller, mentioned something about how it's affected his relationship. And I will second that after the news.
All right. We will talk to Frank Fontana, who's sitting in for Bill Leff. I'm Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage.
Well, when it's running smoothly, it goes together like a horse and carriage.
Oh, yes.
And we have a certified professional life coach on the line with us right now, Amy Schoen. And she is the creator of the Motivated to Marry coaching program. And very nice to meet you, Amy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
When Kevin was, you know, Kevin, of course, is the brains behind this operation, and he pitches us on show ideas.
And newly married.
And he is newly married, absolutely. And yet, I'm thinking, I have friends that maybe their marriages didn't work out so well, and they're having a difficult time meeting people. And I was intrigued when I heard you mention that going to a wedding is a great place to meet someone.
It can be, yes.
Explain.
Where else do you meet? Yeah, you meet friends of friends and people that are probably like-minded and people are in good mood and they're positive about marriage and so what can be bad?
Except they usually have a date, don't they?
Some do and some don't.
I get what you're saying. They could be in the mood because they're watching a wedding. And they're like, oh, that would be so nice for us one day to do that. And then like they get drunk and then they hook up. All that. So I get what you're going with this, Amy.
It is kind of a thing, though, when you're seeing everybody. Because I just know when my husband and I go to a wedding, Jim and I will sit there and, you know, we hold hands as they're exchanging vows. And it brings you back to your wedding. So it is like a feel good.
Where did you get married, Wendy?
At St. Mary's Church in Riverside.
Was it like a traditional wedding?
Yes, it was, because I'm the traditional Catholic girl.
Yeah. Ours wasn't so traditional.
What did you have for a wedding?
We got married. We had 20 people at the wedding. We could have had 20,000 because my wife's family's huge Italian family. But we got married in the there's a place downtown off Jefferson and Fulton called it's a museum furniture store because I'm a designer. So it had to be in this place. It was in the Buddha room where they imported slabs of a Tibetan monastery into this.
Are you listening to this, Amy? No wonder he could only afford 20 people to be there.
It actually didn't cost much. It was more that we wanted something so non-traditional because me and my wife both didn't believe that we were going to get married. We were like, oh, we're going to be that cool hip couple that, you know, travels. Even if we had kids, we didn't. Marriage is just about paperwork. You know, it's just about the legalities of it. To me, and I still believe this, you have to, A, have a great partnership, have a great partner. And the idea of love, and I think there's a difference between lust and chemistry, and then there's love. You know, you can love somebody, you can't, but it doesn't mean you lust them. Doesn't mean that you want to, you know, jump their bones constantly, right?
Who's the expert here, Amy or you?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
I don't know.
Amy's the expert. Amy, you tell me, am I wrong here? Is there a difference between lust and love and marriage
absolutely.
And all that stuff?
Well, yeah, I mean, you want to have some chemistry, but, living day to day, you need some more glue in the relationship, some things to keep you together, you know, through the ups and downs.
Like
right?
Kids? Is kids good glue?
No, kids are the splinters.
Not, you know, I mean, kids can be very difficult on a marriage, or it can be something that everybody is on board and loves it, and you know wants tons of them. So, really, is really what I work from is life vision and making sure that you see your life the same as your partner, because you can like someone and you're being attracted to someone, but if you want different things out of life, it's not going to work for the long term.
Yeah, but Wendy, let me ask you this. When you met Jim, did you ask him a set of questions? Did you have a legit set of questions and say it?
I was friends with my
husband. I was motivated to marry, and I was 41 and wanted to get married and have a family, so I had an agenda, yes. So, I did, but, you know, I actually had to learn how to relax because, you know, I figured, you know, I actually became a little more zen about my approach in the way that I wasn't, you know, I was working to find and meet people, and it wasn't like I was sitting and waiting for someone to drop out of, you know, the sky and you know, be there. Yet, you know, I went out there and I did a lot of stuff. I mean, I was active. I actually met my husband in a bicycling group in D.C. called Bike and Brunch.
Oh, I like the idea of that.
And then we eat. Because I'm Jewish. We eat.
Yeah. We ride and we eat. That's what we do. Wendy, how about you? When you met your husband?
So actually, my husband showed up. We had a barbecue, actually. It was this time, you know, it was actually this time of year. And we connected. The funny thing is I had met him 5 years earlier, and I forgot that I had gone on a date with him.
Oh. Well, that's interesting.
He left a laughing, lasting impression.
Yeah, but it came back to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, we had a really nice date. What happened? And our timing was off, okay, because I was coming out of a marriage. I was divorced, and I had, you know, go through my process. And so, really, timing is very important as well in relationships. You have to be ready.
Well, that's just it. We have Amy Schoen on the line with us. MotivatedToMarry.com is her website, and you can check out her Motivated to Marry coaching program. But for someone listening right now who maybe has a fizzled first marriage, maybe a second marriage, and maybe they're in their 50s, I feel bad. It's tough to meet someone. Some suggestions for those listeners right now?
It's not tough to meet. It's a very active dating age group. My 50s and 60s, it's like musical chairs. You know.
Wow. Listen to you.
Yeah, everybody's, you know, but it's really, I have a book called Get It Right This Time. So it's really about knowing yourself better, making better decisions for yourself, really kind of understanding who you are and what you want out of life. And then, you know, finding and attracting somebody in that same space. Now, online dating has been hands down the best way for people to meet. My clients, out of all of them, I would say over 80% of my successful clients have met their partners through online dating.
Interesting.
All right. So, but there, I guess I do know people who have tried the online.
Well, here we're talking about the wedding thing, too. So, I mean, you got to, you know, the top three ways people meet each other, and there's been research, and I can, you know, is online dating, you know, like 30% through other people. So that's where the wedding thing comes up. And then through your activities and where you spend the majority of your time. You know, what do you do in your free time or even work?
So get busy doing things that you enjoy. Maybe take a class, because if you meet someone who's taking that same class, you right there have some common interests.
You have a common interest. Doesn't mean you have common goals and doesn't mean you have common values. But, yes, it's a start. Yes.
See, I think when you're younger versus your second marriage, you're older and you're getting back out there in your 40s and 50s. You know, I think when you're younger, you're sexually charged and you got that with everything else. I mean, how is it when you're 40 and 50 and you've kind of run the gamut of the sexual era and now you're like, oh.
What are you saying? People in their 40s and 50s don't have sex?
Listen, I'm in my 40s. I'm saying, yeah, I mean, I have sex. But, you know, I'm saying in general, as you get into the second relationship, though. Is it different? Is it more exciting?
Yeah.
Are you more exploratory?
Also, when you do that, what are you doing? You know, it's, you know, one of the mistakes is people becoming too physically active or intimate too quickly because you might miss things. And then, you know, then the there is something called the oxytocins where, you know, the connection hormone. And so, you know, actually my clients, I mean, it was really funny. I was working with a guy who was in his 60s, and he says, you're ruining my sex life, because I was telling him, don't get involved so quickly. Wait, get to know this person and see if this is the kind of woman you want to be with. And then the funny thing is when he did meet the woman who he's been with for, you know, they're together, you know, actually, I think on the third date, they ended up being together.
See, I mean, I don't know too many guys or women, for that matter, on their second go around who, A, say they actually do want to get married again because they're like, oh, we tried that. We've been there. I'd rather just go and date and yeah. mess around. So, I mean, my wife even says...
No, there are people who are very traditional, and they really like having that partner and really feel like having that commitment. And I know I have both male and female clients who come to me and say, you know what, I would like to be married eventually, you know, that's a goal for me. And, you know, I've seen, you know, the difference. I actually have two sister-in-laws. One got remarried, and the other one, they were together as partners for, you know, over 25-plus years. And on the one that got married had more of an issue with the one that didn't, you know, than the vice versa. But, you know, I'm like, you have to create what you need. You know, both people have to be on the same page. And if you're not, it's not going to last. So that's...
The book is called Get It Right This Time. You have several books, and they can all be found at motivatedtomarry.com. Amy Schoen, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, Wendy, the text line is blowing up. Everyone, I've been trying to ask you, and all of our texters and listeners are like, we want to hear about Wendy's story. Wendy, how did you meet Jim? Do we have time for this? You want to do it when we come back?
We'll take a break.
All right.
All right. It's Frank Fontana. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. That's all, you know, he wanted us to have music.
That's it.
We could have gone dry. It wouldn't have killed us.
No, not at all.
Sorry, I brought the volume down. When we were doing the love and marriage segment.
Why did you do that?
Because after love and I didn't want to keep it rolling, so I faded it down and forgot to put it back up. That's a behind the scenes look. And we didn't really
get much out of that.
I guess
just
not.
Be truthful.
I guess not.
But here's what did come out of it. Lots of people texting all your fans here. Wendy, want to know your story. How did you meet Jim? What was it like? What was the chemistry like? Did you have a list of like she said, list of questions? Like, and what I didn't love about what she said was that she went into her relationship finding thing with a premeditated notion of here's a box that I need to fill.
Although, think about it, Frank. If this is your second, third, or even your first marriage and you're over 50, you don't have time to screw around. You pretty much know what you're looking for. And maybe you would ask questions to kind of get, like, you know, I'm too old to have kids. Would you ever think about adopting? Do you have kids? I mean, there are things you really should discuss when you've moved up in the years.
Do you, honestly, if you and Jim, God forbid, ever got divorced, would you ever remarry?
Nope.
Either way.
I totally wouldn't. I've invested in this one. I'm going to make it work. And, you know, if God forbid it's something happens,
yeah.
Or if he passed away, God forbid. No, I really wouldn't.
No way.
I'm
old. Would you date, though?
I don't know. What if Jim's listening?
Jim.
What if Sherry's listening? I don't think about that, really.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't date. I would be. Yes, you would. I would be celibate if my wife.
You're such a liar. Yeah. But Jim and I were actually friends for 2 years before we started dating, which I have explained to my sons that that was a good way to hang out because we were friends. So when you turn the corner into the other way, you have a mutual respect for one another because you're friends. Well, it doesn't always happen that way.
What was it about Jim?
By his
way,
mullet.
You're being worshipped out the window. By
it
the
was
way.
His mullet.
Yeah, his mullet. His mullet did it for you.
Mm. And his acid wash jeans.
With the little rips in the holes and all that stuff in the knees.
No, we both worked in radio at the same time, and he was there, you know, working really hard as a producer, much like our Kevin Richter. And, you know, when I started in radio, you would have long shifts, and then you would have a quick turnaround. So he used to bring his pillow and would sleep in the jock lounge, and I'm like, boy, that boy has a good work ethic. Plus, he was fun.
Did you guys ever mess around in the green room?
Or? No. No, we were friends when we were working together, and then I had an appearance, and I said, hey, you know, you should come by, free beer, and he said yes, so I don't know if he went for the free beer or for me, and then we went to the saloon and had little appetizers afterwards, and I kissed him first because I was sick of waiting.
Really?
Yeah.
So
gotta get it done.
He was not the aggressive type then.
No.
He still really isn't.
He's Mr. Mellow.
He's chill. I love Jim. He's great.
Yeah, but I mean, that's it. We were friends first. How did you meet Sherry?
Well, it depends on who's telling you the story, so I'm going to tell you my version.
Call her later.
Yeah, my version I was doing a shoot for HGTV here in downtown Chicago. I was shooting Design a Dime at the time, and she was working at the pier, and she took a sabbatical, and in between, she wanted to be an esthetician. So she did some stuff at this facial clinic I used to get my facials at. And I went in there, to use the restroom because I was whatever. And
this is killing me.
Oh, it's great.
This should be a movie.
It was totally. And then this girl used to do my face. She said, "Oh, there's this new girl working here. You should definitely go. You know, I'm gonna put you together with her." I was like, "Okay." So I get an appointment with her, and you know, as she's like doing my face and whatever, I'm like, "Oh, maybe you know, she's an Italian girl." Like, and I never thought I'd end up with a full blown Italian girl. Like,
because you are one.
Because I'm full blown Italian, and I was like, I'm not marrying a girl off the boat or anything like that. So, lo and behold, she does my face, and I'm like, hey, we should go out. I just moved to Chicago. I'm from L.A. You know, I don't know this place.
I liked what you did to my face. I can only imagine.
Yeah, exactly. So then, we dated a couple times. She went away to Florida for a vacation. She, like, played hard to get, didn't call me, and then she came back, started stalking me, and, like, I gave in.
She wasn't stalking you. She was interested in you. I don't like your side of the story.
No.
But I just think that it is awesome that you are a manly man, that you're able to admit that you get facials. I've had one in my life, and I hated it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love it. But I don't like the pimple popping part where they.
Okay, Frank, come on.
They use this device.
Stop it, really. Like Patrick McDonald is going to be in. He's the film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. We're going to talk to him about some movies that are opening up. You and I don't go to movies that often. You have younger kids. I just don't like going to a movie.
No, the last movie I saw was Moana, which I loved.
Oh, all right. Well, there's a new movie out that I think your kids saw.
Boss Baby.
Is that it? No, that's not. Oh, Boss Baby.
Alex,
I'm getting that
Alex
confused.
Baldwin, yeah.
That's Baby Driver.
No, I think it's Boss Baby. Baby Driver, I haven't heard of yet.
Oh, there's too many baby movies, but we will talk about baby movies with Patrick McDonald, who will be in after the news. It's 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. It is Wendy Snyder here, and Frank Fontana is sitting in for Bill Leff. He will return on Monday. I will be off on Monday. We do tag team vacation days. And Patrick McDonald is in the studio. He's a pretty regular guest, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, chief guide for the Chicago Film Tour.
Yep.
At ChicagoFilmTour.com. I was telling Frank Fontana about your tours that for the last, 4 years, I'm like, I got to go on one of these.
Sounds fun.
It is fun. It's the, go around the city, see the video, see the sights. That's pretty much it.
So do you spend a lot of time in Shermerville? Or Northbrook?
I think the bus is sort of Shermerville territory, yes.
And you also,
we do a nice tribute to Mr. Hughes on the tour, by the way.
And what's
John
Hughes. What's the most popular stop?
That's a good question. I would think Wrigley Field. It's just academic. Because a lot of people, if they're out-of-towners, have never seen the ballpark. And just to, you know, behold that history. And, of course, with the championship, it's all good. I had a number of jokes I had to leave behind after they won the World Series.
I bet you lost half your material.
I did.
Do you get to upcharge now?
Luckily, luckily there's a clip with Rob Lowe and Demi Moore from about last night. I say Rob Lowe wearing a Cubs cap. That's the new Cubs curse.
Oh, God.
And was where they were doing the shots, was that Faces in About Last Night? Was it a bar called Faces?
Was it called?
Or Mother's?
No, it was called Mother Malone's.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was Mother's, and they changed the name to Mother Malone's. So
you also do a Blues Brothers tour, which I've been talking about going on.
We haven't done that in a while. I can tell you off air why.
Oh, bummer. I should have gone while I had the opportunity.
For legal reasons, right.
You might want to figure it out from that statement. So.
All right. Usually when you come in here and yes. Bill is here, Bill goes to see movies a lot more than I do.
I know, and this is what's interesting about this.
It's all you, buddy.
Well, no.
Unless you can talk kid movies.
No, Frank never goes to a movie either.
Well, Frank, you know, you should give your insight as to the last movie you saw and what the design element is in it.
I could do that. Moana. The backdrop of Hawaii. I don't know, man. I got two young kids.
Do you get inspiration from other media for design work? May I interview you now?
Sure, please. What was the question again?
Do you get inspiration from other media, like television?
Of course, I do.
Magazines, movies, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, everything is inspiring, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like walking down the street, I could see something. I could see it. My mind works really freaky. I'll look at like an angle or a corner of like a building and be like, oh my God, I love that. And I'm going to do that in like a design or something. So yes, movies do inspire me. You know, I often... You know, fall adrift from the main story and stare at the backdrop of everything.
I know. I bet you do.
I do. It's a sickness.
How do people reach you if they want some home design? Because you did a fabulous job with our house.
Thank you. Yeah, you could go to my website, frankfontana.net, and drop me an email at info@frankfontana.net. We do all sorts of...
I went right into the plug, brother. You should...
Dude, I am so thankful, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Here's my question. Yes. Frank and I were talking before we went on the air, and I said, I think I screwed it up first. I'm not sure, but I have seen a trailer for Baby Driver, and Kevin and I were talking as well. And I said that is the dumbest name for a movie, and I realized that the driver's name is Baby. And then Frank said, "Oh, my kids just saw that," and I said, "Really?" And you were talking Boss Baby. There are too many baby movies going on.
I mentioned Alec Baldwin. You're like, yeah, and apparently not, right?
No, it's Jamie Foxx.
Go to Hollywood, Three Men and a Baby remake right now.
Right, exactly.
But see, that's confusing to me. When did Boss Baby, is Boss Baby still out and about?
It's still, I guess, lingering in theaters. It should come out on DVD or digital very soon.
Well, with our town, LaGrange, we get the last wave of theater,
right?
You know, and then it just goes to DVD right after LaGrange. I think that's the cutoff is our town.
But now, to me, that's too close and too confusing. Boss Baby, Baby Driver. Sorry.
So anyway, what's Baby Driver about?
But this looks awesome.
It is totally awesome. It's very, you know, Tarantino-esque. But it exists in its own universe. I call it the movie of movie land because it just creates this whole atmosphere and environment and brings it to... a crescendo. It's like a symphony because the main character, who is played by Mr. Yes,
you know.
Ansel Elgort. He was in an accident when he was a kid in the movie, and he has tinnitus ringing in his ear.
That's what Pete Townsend had too.
So he keeps earbuds in constantly, and his whole life's a soundtrack. So
that's dangerous to drive with earbuds in. Yes. I think it's against the law.
That's part of the allure if you're driving a baby around.
Say hi to the fans on Facebook.
I didn't know that concept. It's pretty star-studded.
Yes. Yes. We have John Berthal, John Hamm, Elza Gonzalez, a newcomer, Lily James, who's been rising in the last few years, the great Jamie Foxx, and of course, the guy who can play bosses like no other boss, Mr. Kevin Spacey.
I love him.
He is just great. He is a good boss. He practically owns the boss persona in movies right now.
Yeah, Marlon Brando, though, could play a good boss, too. Yeah. Depending on which family we're talking about.
There, you made a movie reference, right?
There you go. I participated in some capacity.
Seriously, when Bill and Patrick are talking, I just kind of sit back. It's like break time for me.
Exactly. Go smoke a cigarette. Yeah, I hear you.
So, yeah, it's just a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am kind of movie. It's just great. It's,
action, adventure.
Action, adventure, all kind of things. Basically a heist movie because Spacey plays a boss named Doc who sets up all these heists. And he always gets different people except for Baby because Baby can drive.
He's
Baby
a good
driver. Is the Mozart of the goat cart, as they say in the,
I like that
movie. It's just Edgar Wright is the guy who did Shaun of the Dead. He did Scott Pilgrim versus the World. He did
Hot
Fuzz. I
liked that movie.
He's just he had a controversy last year where he was left the Ant-Man movie, but he's back in spades and he's going to be his reputation's going to go way up after this one. There's a very funny story associated with it because at the Golden Globes, you know, they gave the Cecil B. DeMille Award to Meryl Streep.
So, too bad she can't act.
Edgar Wright tweets out, well, she's going to be in my new movie, meaning Baby Driver. Turns out she's on the TV when they're clicking the channels. There's one scene of Meryl.
That's it.
I mean, people seem to like the movie. I mean, they're tweeting in Baby Driver is the name of a Simon and Garfunkel song as well, and they saw it last night and thought it was entertaining.
Yeah, there you go. It's a perfect movie, you know, to get out of the hot weather into the cold air conditioning and just see another hot film.
Movies? I wish I did.
But see, now that's just it. I can't sit in one place that long. You know, if a movie's over 2 hours, I get theater ass really badly.
Does it itch?
No, it's
is it like
just
swamp ass?
I really no, I don't know what that is. I just can't sit there for that long. But if a movie is really good, you know, you're not looking at your watch.
Right.
What is your rating on this?
I'm giving it 4 out of 5. I it's not a watch watcher. It's a great film. It's a lot of fun. It really kicks into gear the second hour. The first hour, I kind of was thinking, oh man, is this just a kind of, you know, the tough guy, criminals, rebel movie that you see a lot.
Another Reservoir Dogs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Tarantino. And then, boom, it hits. Once it hits, it is like a symphony to the end.
Really?
I swear to God. With a big crescendo. It's just wonderful.
All right. And the guy who is Baby Driver, Ansel Elgort.
Yes.
What is he's going to be? I've never heard of him before.
Well, he's kind of, again, a rising kind of guy, a rising star. The Fault in Our Stars was his big teen breakout movie. But he has been dubbed to play John F. Kennedy. That's right, John F. Kennedy.
Really?
In a film called Mayday 109, not PT 109, which was the Cliff Robertson movie in 1963. But they're calling it Mayday 109.
All right, and
so he'll be playing JFK apparently.
My youngest son Dylan is obsessed with JFK.
Interesting.
We watched
so
that 11/23. Is that it? 11/23.
Oh yeah, the miniseries.
Yes.
Yeah.
With James Franco.
Yes.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
So JFK in Mayday 109? What is this going to be about?
Well, interestingly enough, PT 109 with Cliff Robertson in 1963 was there's only two movies that have been made while the president's still in office. One was W by Oliver Stone.
Yeah.
And the other was PT 109, which, of course, made Kennedy to be out this very heroic guy. And also Cliff Robertson would not do the Boston accent in that movie, by the way.
Really?
If you ever watch it, it's just Cliff Robertson playing. And also, Warren Beatty was up for the part. So he told me in an interview that him and JFK talked a lot because he was trying to, you know, wrangle for the role and eventually didn't get it because he didn't want it, he said. But he got to know John F. Kennedy at that time.
Wow.
So part of that way that he got into politics in the 1960s, and he was a big time into that. He was at the Park Hyatt when they were gassing people. So there you go. Not Park Hyatt, the Hilton. Sorry, Park Hyatt. The Hilton. Chicago Hilton on South Michigan there.
All right. And that's
which we go to in the tour.
I got to do that tour. I really do. How many locations are on that tour?
Oh, my gosh.
Ballpark figure.
40.
Really?
Yeah.
Where does it start at?
It starts at the Rock and Roll McDonald's. Perfect. Thank you. There's a plug beginning. On plug. Thank
there you go.
Yeah, you can go to chicagofilmtour.com.
Yep.
There's also a number to call.
Yes, 312-593-4455. Thank you.
I can help you with that.
Thank you. I don't have it in front of me.
All right. So Baby Driver, 4 out of 5 mm-hmm. stars. We're going to take a quick break. It's Patrick McDonald, and we are talking movies, and we're actually participating, Frank.
I'm listening more than participating, quite honestly.
You're throwing out a few things every
here
once
there,
and about.
I'll say something.
I like
but
that.
I'm waiting for when we get to the Batman part.
All right, we'll get to that next.
From your smooth radio voice.
Thank you.
It's Wendy Snyder and Frank Fontana in for Bill Leff on 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here, along with Frank Fontana, who's in for Bill Leff, who will return on Monday. We are talking movies with Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, also chief guide for the Chicago Film Tour at ChicagoFilmTour.com. 4 out of 5 stars for Baby Driver,
yes.
Not Boss Baby,
right.
In case we confused anyone.
Right.
What other movies did you see?
Well, here's, to me, the movie of the weekend, and it'll be for a specific like art house audience, maybe. But, you know, I'm recommending it to everybody. 5 out of 5 for The Beguiled by Sofia Coppola. Beautiful, beautiful
film. I've been hearing
film.
Some buzz about this.
You want to talk about a great design inspiration
yeah.
film, Southern Gothic, like you can feel the magnolias under your
sure.
fingernails, you know.
And the gist of this movie.
I don't know if that's the right reference. What?
The
gist of this movie, this is actually a remake. Believe it or not, Clint Eastwood did this film in 1971 with the great Don Siegel, who did Dirty Harry with him, directing. It's about a Union soldier who gets away from the battlefield, goes into the woods, he's severely injured, and this girl from a boarding school finds him and brings him back to the boarding school to recover. Now, what's interesting, it's very Freudian because it's girls in all of their aspects of age, starting with Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, Elle Fanning, and then all the way down through the littler girls in the it's actually a prepubescent girl who finds him in the woods. Now I'm really going Freud, but basically it's about how these women react to this man who is in their home.
Wow,
and
that
it's
sounds
very
really
very intriguing, especially I think for women this will be a good movie because it'll harken back to that time when they're kind of exploring what they were thinking about as they were going through adolescence.
I saw the commercial for it, interestingly enough, and it seemed like there was some sexual overtones on all different
they're
ages.
They're really playing that up in the trailer, which it's more subtle in the movie, but they're playing it. Can think about that society back then. This is 1864. The movie is set very repressed. You know, especially for women.
Yeah,
they had to toe the line back then. So to get an environment where the man is there and there's no other people around, you know, and see the reaction. It's quite interesting.
And who plays the male lead?
The male lead is Colin Farrell.
He's nice on the
he
eyes.
Plays one of the yeah, and he's very
is
very,
he good in this?
Yes, he's excellent. And he plays an Irish guy because the Irish used to replace a lot of you could pay your way out if you were a northern if you were drafted into the Northern Army, you could pay $300 to have somebody substitute for you, and they would give the money to these guys who are coming off the boat from Ireland.
Wow.
So he
good gig if you can stay alive.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Sofia Coppola has done movies before.
Yes. Lost in Translation,
yes. Which I still haven't seen.
Great
can you believe
movie.
That?
I did see that.
There
one.
You go.
Yeah.
That is a great film. It really is. Another one about the longings that, you know, people have that they go unexpressed a lot of times. And this is another one of those films.
She goes deep.
Yes, she does. She really does. Now, there's been some criticism, and I'll just bring this up quickly. The original movie, which I haven't seen, they did have slaves in it. They take care of this conundrum in this movie by saying the slaves all ran away when the battle got close to the place, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does.
Let the woman make the movie she wants to make, and she did. So, I mean, it's part of it, you know. This is part of it.
All right, and that's The Beguiled 5 out
yes,
of 5.
Yes, 5 out of 5. The Big Sick. Now, this is set in Chicago. This is the guy, Kumail Nanjiani, who's on Silicon Valley. He plays Dinesh on Silicon Valley. So he's from Pakistan, and he kind of relates about his life in stand-up and when he met his wife, his American wife. So it's set in B-roll Chicago. You know how they come in and do B-roll?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that means they take pictures of the
train.
Of the train in Wrigley Field.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But they're obviously someplace else.
Yeah.
So, it's really about the stand-up scene, and it doesn't feel like Chicago at all. In fact, that's what the problem I have with this movie. It was inauthentic. And I gave it 2 out of 5, unfortunately. I interviewed Kumail and his wife, Emily V. Gordon, who co-wrote the movie. They were writing about their life, and they're great people.
And this is about stand-up comedy?
Well, it's Kumail is a stand-up comedian and meets his wife in the club while he's doing stand-up.
Did you, Patrick, see the movie before you interviewed them?
Yes.
Were you honest with them?
Well, no. Hope they're not listening, but no, I was. There's no need to talk about what you, if you think the movie is not.
So you keep your personal preference.
I keep my personal preferences out.
You say you saw it.
Yes, yes.
You can even say good job because they accomplished something.
And I can also say good luck this weekend or break a leg because you know it doesn't matter what my opinion is. It's what the box office opinion is, and it's getting BAFO reviews.
Is BAFO good or bad?
It's good, I guess.
Okay.
My old-fashioned Hollywood, you know.
I wondered the same thing.
I didn't know.
BAFO.
So BAFO. 2 out of 5 on
two out of five.
The Big Sick.
Also opening Despicable Me 3. I didn't review it, but, you know, everybody who loves Despicable Me wants to know.
I'll be there.
There you go.
You'll be. It's funny. Both my boys saw Despicable Me 1 and 2 with Grandma. So they actually brought it up when we saw Grandma over the weekend and said, hey, we going to see Despicable Me 3, which to me is kind of a cute little thing that you have to. Traditions, you got to see
it's nice.
Of the series.
That is nice.
And it's a funny series, you know.
Steve Carell's great.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's playing twins
him?
In this one. He's playing both Gru and Drew.
All right, I might have to see it. All right, and you, Frank, wanted some Batman news.
Please.
Yes, 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 quickly. The new director of Batman, now we have three lives of Batman. We have the campy Batman. We're talking about Adam West a couple weeks ago. We have the Dark Knight.
I'm Batman.
Yes, there you go. And
thank you very much, by the way.
That was as good as your Felicia Millbrook. So,
don't get me started, Patrick. Troublemaker. All right, so that's the second.
So, and the third aspect of Batman, he's the world's greatest detective. He's literally a Sherlock Holmes in a cape and cowl. And this is what Matt Reeves, the new director, wants to bring out in him. I think it would be interesting
Sounds
if it were
boring.
A mystery. Well, it depends on how you set up the mystery. Of course, there's going to be the fights and everything. But this is a combination, going back to Batman's roots. He starred in Detective Comics
but
in 1939.
Is it going to be more about his parents again? Trying to
No.
I feel like they beat that to death.
We all know that story.
I mean, I couldn't believe they went back to the origin, except that they filmed it at the Aragon Ballroom.
Yeah, that's
Did
nice.
You know that?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, they filmed the Batman origin story in Batman v Superman right at the Aragon, and in the background, the CTA was the GTA, the Gotham Transit Authority.
And who's going to be playing Batman?
Mr. Ben Affleck. Now, he dropped off as a director, as you recall, and this may change the script significantly. He already had a villain, which was Deathstroke. Which I'm not familiar with. That must be a villain that came around like Bane. You know, I wasn't really familiar with him either. So
I loved Bane.
I can't do it. But I loved him.
How do we all feel about Affleck as Batman?
Did you see Batman v Superman?
I did.
What did you think?
I thought it was okay.
I mean, I thought he was okay. I mean, he's
okay.
More of a brooding, you know, middle-aged Batman. But
he appears in Wonder Woman too, correct?
No, Batman doesn't.
He doesn't?
He sends her a note.
I'm thinking of the trailers of the Justice League coming
yes,
out.
Yes, Justice League, he'll be in that.
Interesting.
But
an aging Batman, but you know what? That happens.
Exactly.
These superheroes get older.
He's Diesel.
Do they age?
He has that Adam West, you know, the good chin look, you know, Affleck. He does look good in the costume, but the jury's out as to whether what he'll do with the character, because in Batman v Superman, he didn't seem to be playing a character as much as a representation of Batman.
Well, right, because you had to share the stage with such an iconic figure.
I had some problems with that film, but
you did.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and when is the Batman movie out?
There is no release date scheduled. They just hired Matt Reeves, who is doing War for the Planet of the Apes in a couple weeks. That's coming out. So I can talk about that. And I did get a preview of Spider-Man, and the embargo is off, so a lot of fun.
All right. Patrick McDonald, thanks, you can find him at HollywoodChicago.com, and you can take his tour since he is chief guide for the Chicago Film Tour. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com. Again, his website, HollywoodChicago.com. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Rock and roll.
All right, we'll talk to Steve Bertrand next, see what he has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And then, Frank, you and I are going to the stream.
Oh, boy.
We cannot cross streams, but we will be there.
I've never been there before.
Oh, okay.
I'm scared.